We here at the Pro Wrestling Roundtable dedicate this final episode of 2017 to the wrestlers and wrestling personalities that have passed the following year. There were actually 40 of them, and I'm going to list them, and we're going to give a 10-bell salute at the end. Crazy Joe, a.k.a. Joseph Gatiss, died January 5th at 49 years of age. Rex King, a.k.a. more well-known as Timothy Well of the tag team Well Done, died at age 55 on January 9th. The Superfly, Jimmy Snuka, one of the most popular wrestlers of his era, died at the age of 73 on January 15th. Jun Isumudi, 51, died on January 25th. J.J. Carson tragically died at the young age 31, an independent wrestler, on January 27th. Tom Drake died at 86 on February 2nd. Brutal Bob Sweetan, who was a journeyman bad guy and tough guy in the territories, died at the age of 76 on February 10th. Chavo Guerrero Sr. of the infamous and legendary Guerrero wrestling family, the father of Chavo Jr., of course, died at the age of 68 on February 11th. The beloved, but then before, beloved in the latter part of his career, and feared in the earlier part of his career, George the Animal Steele, died on the age of 79 on at February 17th. Nicole Bass, who made a bit of a splash there during the Attitude Era, and sort of a China competition, died at the age of 52. On February 17th, legendary Ivan Koloff, who actually was the hand-picked choice by Bruno Sammartino to take the WWF title off of him, and of course was part of the Russians, died at the age of 74 on February 18th. Taurus Bulba, or Johnny K9, or Bruiser Bedlam, and the many names he went by, who wrestled several independent areas, including in the WWE for a while, and then Smoky Mountain, died at the age of 53 on February 21st. Tom Bearcat Jones died at the age of 78 on March 4th. One and only Ron Bass, who was another journeyman, bad guy, cowboy, good guy, cowboy, also had a run in the WWF, and of course a very famous run down in Florida against Dusty Rhodes and Barry Windham, died at the age of 68 on March 7th. Famous jobber Dennis Stamp died at the age of 68, March 13th. Rhubarb Jones died at the age of 65 on April 2nd. Fishman died at the age of 66 on April 8th. The legendary Larry Sharp, the trainer who brought us Bam Bam Bigelow and many others from his Monster Factory, died at the age of 65 on April 10th. Rosie, who is part of the great Samoan family, brothers of so many others, including Umaga and Rikishi and the others, died at the age of 47 on April 17th. Brazo de Oro died at the age of 57 on April 28th. Gran Apache, a famous luchador, died at the age of 58 May 7th. Richard Delicious, another young indie wrestler, dying far too young at the age of 29 on May 13th. Pretty Boy Doug Summers, a jobber turned headliner for AWA, and one of my very favorite feuds between Summers and Playboy Buddy Rose and Sherry Martel versus the Rockers in AWA, died at the age of 65 on May 16th. Rotten Ron Starr, another great journeyman heel guy. I've always been a huge fan of his. He was just a wonderful heel. Died at the age of 67 on June 8th. Heartthrob Buddy Wayne died at the age of 50 on June 17th. Chandler Biggins, another young indie wrestler, dying at the age of 35 on June 19th. Mr. Pogo, Japanese legend for hardcore matches and the such, died at the age of 66 on June 23rd. Smith Hart, part of the legendary Hart family, the brother of Brett and Owen and others, died at the age of 68 on July 2nd. Moondog Fifi died at the age of 55 on July 6th. Beautiful Buddy Wolf, who's probably most well-known as a jobber in WWF, died at the age of 76 on July 11th. Otto Wanz, the Hulk Hogan of Germany, the biggest name in the guy who ran the German territories or the German wrestling area for, you know, years and years and years, and a former AWA champion, died at the age of 74 on September 14th. Bobby the Brain Heenan, touted it by many to be the greatest manager of all time, and also well known for his work as an announcer and heel commentator, died at the age of 72 on September 17th. Lance Russell, who is one of the three names usually tossed out as the best commentator of all time in wrestling, certainly by anybody from the Tennessee area is going to say it's Lance Russell, who called the Memphis area wrestling for years and years and years and years and years, and also for had a brief run with the WCW, died at the age of 91 on October 3rd. Eric Dennis, another young indie wrestler, died at the age of 40 on October 10th. Burrhead Jones died at the age of 80 on October 15th. Stan Kowalski, former football player turned wrestler who was well known in the Midwest, died at the age of 91 on October 20th. Bill Kirsten, who was an announcer for American Professional Wrestling, died in his 90s. Actually, we don't know exactly what old age he was on October 20th. Tokyo Joe died at the age of 75 on November 4th. Another old-timer, Tugboat Taylor, died at the age of 71. He's a Houston area, the guy that helped find, you know, Booker T and Stevie Ray and many others. And his brother, his son, Chaz Taylor, is somewhat well-known in the indies. He died at the age of 71 on November 8th. And finally, Z-Man himself, Tom Zink, who died at the age of 59 on December 9th, who's most well-known for being in the K-Man Express with Rick Martel and being in tag team with Brian Pillman in WCW. So there we go. We're sorry to see them all go. And now we give them the 10-bell salute. Hey, folks, yes, we'd like to talk a little bit about that. As you probably noted, a very great many of those people on that list you probably don't know by name. You probably don't know them. And you see that some of them are very, you know, advanced in age. That is something that's been on my mind quite a bit, as I tend to be a wrestling aficionado, obviously, but I'm also an aficionado of the past. As a matter of fact, it's kind of a frustrating thing because it's very difficult to find a lot of stuff. I mean, thanks to the WWE, we do have a pretty good selection of old stuff that you could see in YouTube, too. But before television became a big deal, there's a lot of older stuff that's lost. And so that's why I'm thankful to people like Jim Cornette and the kind of guys like him who keep this stuff alive, because, I mean, there's some of these people that were enormously famous at one time. I mean, you know, household names in their particular respective areas, or if they were on the 50s television, were well-known, you know, throughout the country. And it's just, it's almost kind of a melancholy thing to me to think about, you know, that somebody was so big and popular at one time, and now barely anybody knows them. And so I just thought we might discuss that a little bit in wake of these deaths.
Yeah, and We should also note that there's still a few days left of the year, so hopefully we don't lose anyone else in between now and then.
Well, certainly, yes. So, anybody got any other thoughts about that? What, or any of the particular ones on there that they feel, you know, need extra words spoken to about? Just spoken about?
I miss George the Animal Steel dying, I feel. I don't quite remember that. And so that kind of shows what you're talking about already. You know, it's not even been a year, and I didn't really even know he died. But I mean, a lot of that, like Ron Bass, when I was a kid, I was a huge Ron Bass fan, which is kind of odd, just because Ron Bass wasn't, you know, I mean, he was a super heel when I was a kid. And but I loved him. I mean, he was a great heel. And I miss that one too.
Great promo. He come off very legit and mean. Where I first really got to know him was in the infamous saddle feud with Barry Windham. And then I since went back and I watched the stuff that even led to that, where he was feuding with Dusty and so on and so forth. It was a great storyline that was really told about this whole idea that these guys were all friends going way back from Texas, and that they all, you know, co-owned the ranch and all this and the other, along with Black Jay Mulligan and Dusty Rhodes and Ron Bass. But then Ron turns on Dusty, and then he turns on Black Jack, and then he starts to try to humiliate and destroy the upcoming Barry Windham. I mean, he puts the saddle on his back in the ring and rides him. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just that old school humiliation thing to get all the fans and all the girls really mad and sad and upset. And that's the feud where, you know, that was the first time they used the yellow dog, dirty yellow dog, because that's what he would call, Barry. And then Barry actually lost the loser to leave town, and then he come back as the dirty yellow dog.
And was this WCW or pre-WCW?
This was Florida. This was championship wrestling in Florida.
Okay. Yeah.
And then later they brought back the dirty yellow dog gimmick with Eddie Gilbert in WCW, or Crockett, season before that was still before WCW, not before WCW. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just some of these guys you don't think about, you know, you haven't seen in years or whatever. I think maybe the reason George Steele kind of went off the radar with you because he died the same day that Nicole Bass did and the day before Ivan Koloff did.
Wow. So,
and, there was a bad run there. Bob Sweetan, February 10th. Chavo Guerrero Sr., February 11th. George Steele, February 17th. Nicole Bass, 17th. Ivan Koloff, February 18th. So.
And Nicole Bass is one that, I mean, she was basically a China ripoff in many ways. She was ECW's China. I mean, she was originally.
Yes, and as Asia was for WCW.
Yeah.
But Nicole Bass had her own little bit of mainstream crossover, because I remember she would be on the Howard Stern show a lot.
And she's very popular on Howard Stern.
Yes, indeed.
And you also mentioned a Moondog, which is a group that I wasn't familiar with until a few years back. The NWA Fan Fest, or whatever it's called, that's usually in Charlotte. They did it in Atlanta one year. And and I went to some of that stuff, and there was a guy there who was one of the Moondogs. And I felt kind of weird because he was kind of like, he's being very humble, but also kind of... he was trying to get into the actual wrestling event that was happening, which was pretty far away from where the convention was held. Right. And he was telling somebody like, well, I'm Moondog so-and-so. And they didn't know who he was. And so that's one of those moments.
Oh, man.
That's a good example of what you're talking about. Of like, apparently the Moondogs were a big thing.
They
and
were
I've been
huge.
Wrestling since the 80s. And I had never seen them on TV.
They had a very brief, well, not really a brief. They had a run in WWF back before the Hogan era. And they were...
How many of them were there?
Well, originally there was just two. There was usually really only two at a time. But overall, I think before it was all said and done, there was about a half a dozen of them. You know, they would change out.
the one that died was a female, right?
She was a female, and she's more of a recent one that was working on the indies. Yes.
Oh, okay. So there still are dogs.
Yeah, the moon dogs are still there. It's just like one of those type of gimmicks that never dies, like the Andersons. Everybody will take the Anderson name or you know, some other stuff that, you know, that keep the legacy alive, you know. Like a, but yeah, she continued that thing. Apparently there's also some new Vachons out there. I didn't know about that myself. So, I mean, and they're not really actually related to the Vachons, but they got permission to use the Vachon's name, and they do. So, actually, I thought at first the Briscoe brothers got the permission from Jerry Briscoe, but apparently not. I mean, they do spell it different, but still. But yeah, the Moondogs were, and again, it's just one of those things where sometimes people are more famous in certain areas of the country than they are others, because back in the territory days. And I mean, there's a lot of WWE fans that know them that are older WWE fans. And I tell you, definitely, probably the place they're most famous is Memphis, because they had a lot of different runs in Memphis and tag team feuds and so on and so forth. But, yeah. Lance Russell and Bobby the Brain are probably, as far as non-wrestlers, certainly. And of course, Bobby did start out as a wrestler, but are probably the two biggest names as far as, you know, as Jerry Lawler put it and Jim Cornette put it, and it's true, especially back in the day. I mean, it's still true now, because, you know, there's a whole generation of people that grew up with, you know, if they grew up in the Hulk Hogan area, you know, it's Bobby and it's Gorilla and Jesse. And if they grew up in the Attitude Era, it's, you know, JR and King. And that's the one true constant that you have. I mean, wrestlers will come and go, you know, and stars will rise and fall. But the one constant you got is the person calling those matches. And that forms a bond. And nobody did that bigger than Lance Russell, who, I mean, he literally called wrestling from the 50s up until, the, you know, the 90s. I mean, that's a huge run. And so as far as everybody in Tennessee is concerned, particularly Memphis, that Lance Russell is the guy. I mean, he is associated with professional wrestling even more than Jerry is there, you know, because, you know, he was there before Jerry. And so that's a pretty cool thing, you know. And that's one of those deals where Lance will never be forgotten in that area, you know, ever. Because he was... He was also a television guy outside of wrestling, but I mean, that was the main thing he was known for. But yeah. So, okay. Well,
And we're not forgetting about Bobby Heenan. We will probably talk more about him later.
Bobby,
or give him his own show next year.
We might do. Yeah. Well, yeah, we will, because I told you that I invited the indie manager, man, this is a bad problem tonight, boys. Nigel Rabid to join us for a show about managers, and that would be the perfect place, because he actually wrote a very wonderful post on Facebook after the death of Bobby, and, you know, and how Bobby was his greatest inspiration. So that would be a perfect time to do that, I think. So anyway, we are going to go on to brighter and less somber things, hopefully. As we talk about 2017, the year of the past, and a little bit about what we hope and dream about might come about in the new coming year. So stick around, and me and Jerry and Jerry.
Wrong podcast.
Not Jerry. Me and, of course, Jonathan Williams and Rich Jewell. And remember, I'm John Mill. Don't ever forget my name. We'll return on the other side. And we will start discussing all this. So, on with the show.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter. Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
Folks, it's time for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. Once again, I am your host, John Morgan Neal. And that over there, guy behind all those machines and the Jacob's Ladders and the electronics is Richard Yule, our producer. And finally returning after too long of an absence because of his engagements and working hard on the movie set somewhere is the one and only Jonathan Williams, our Bon Vivant reporter from WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. Welcome back, Jonathan. Let's talk about some 2017 in wrestling.
Yeah. Welcome back, Jonathan. It's been a while. You've been out making movies and TVs.
Yeah. In fact, I can plug it a little bit, I guess.
All right.
Do it. The show I've been working on is called The Gifted, and it airs while Raw is on Monday nights on Fox at 9 p.m. And it's set in the X-Men universe. So now, I guess it's, since the Disney purchase, it is somewhat officially part of the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe in some sense.
Perhaps. There is a division line between the TV and the movies, though. But I don't know what all that.
Well, not for Marvel so much. I mean, Marvel mostly ties a lot of their stuff together.
To the movie
thing. And with The Gifted, it's kind of acts as a prequel in many ways.
Right.
Yeah.
Or could.
Yeah, so, who knows what they're going to decide to do with the whole X-Men side of things.
Yeah.
But for the time being, the show had its last Monday was the fall season finale, so there won't be new episodes until January, the beginning of January.
Mm-hmm.
But I worked on episode 9 through 13 is the last episode. So two of the episodes that have aired, I worked on, and everything before that I wasn't on there yet. But I think it's a pretty good show, and I encourage people to watch it.
I mean, we've talked about it. I love it. I'm still like 2-3 episodes behind from the winter finale, but it really is a cool action show. Like, they do a really good job. It's got, the only really big name I know. Well, I mean, there's a couple of big names you'll notice. The wife is from the Whedonverse, I think. I've seen her in Amy Acker, I think's her name.
Yeah, she was on
Dollhouse. I feel she was also on Dollhouse. Maybe I made that up.
I haven't seen that.
But Stephen Moyer from True Blood. I mean, he's on it. It took me a little bit to not see Bill from True Blood.
Yeah,
but
and he's married to Anna Paquin, also from True Blood, also from X-Men. So that
is kind of funny.
If there's ever a crossover there.
I think that is kind of funny. What other little show did you work on, Jonathan?
Well, I worked on Stranger Things. I worked on season one for the last two episodes, but I worked on all of season two, which I worked on it long ago. Well, not too long ago. Earlier this year. But of course, I haven't been on the podcast since season two came out. So, I've heard a lot of people like it.
Yeah. Did you say what you did? The set designer or set dresser?
Set dresser. Yeah. The set designer is basically the head of my department.
Ah.
And we carry out,
what they...
The set decorator is our direct boss, basically. And so we do what the set designer and set decorator have decided on. But there's some creative input there. Sometimes, you know, when you're actually on there on the set,
might say, hey, what about this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's Stranger Things is a lot of fun because there's a lot of toys on the sets. You don't see them so much in the show, which is kind of funny. But, you know, we had Transformers and Dungeons and Dragons action figures, G.I. Joe, all that kind of stuff. All the stuff that I still collect, basically.
Yeah.
Not a lot of wrestling. I hadn't seen any wrestling figures yet. I guess those kids weren't into, they're too nerdy for wrestling. Which these days, nerds are wrestling fans. But
I was going to say, there's a lot of nerd wrestling fans.
Anyway, that's where I've been, and glad to be back. Today was my last day for a while until I get on whatever the next thing is.
Cool.
But I've been working on set for The Gifted, which is a little bit different. Because that's why the hours are a lot different there and a lot longer. So a lot of the times when I thought I would be joining you guys for the podcast, I'd still be sitting there on set. Even when I got Tyson Dean, you know, I was going to interview him. And
no, you weren't able to be there.
Yeah.
I did, you don't know if you saw, I did get to meet Tyson there here locally. He was at the show, monthly show. And I got a picture with him and Tim Storm that's up on the Facebook page.
Yeah, I saw that. Mm-hmm. He's usually a nice guy.
He's a very nice guy. Yep, very nice.
Yeah. So, and honestly, you miss some of some of our podcasts because of Stranger Things season one, I think. But then you kind of plowed through season two, and we made it work, and we're glad we could always count on you to come on and join us.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I missed so many episodes, but glad you will have me back when I'm available.
Oh, yeah, I don't think this year you missed any except for the past two or three. Two, I think.
Yeah.
Much, yeah.
So
yeah, you missed a lot more last year than you did this year.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that was mainly because I didn't really know Stranger Things season one was the first thing I worked on long term since I got into the film stuff.
Mm.
And the hours were long and this and that, and I kind of just didn't know what to expect. So I thought it was a better idea to just focus on that and not have any other obligations.
Well, sure, that pays the... Pays the bills and buys
the
toys.
Bills. So. Well, it's been a big year. 2017 has been. It's been last two or three years of seemingly nonstop big news and changes and shakeups and all kinds of things. And the one thing I was thinking about when I was thinking about was going to do this episode about talking about, you know, how things have become in 2017, specifically as it relates to the WWE. You know, there's lots of complaints about the WWE as usual, and a lot of those are, you know, legit, and some of them I think are not as legit as some others, and you always can stand improvement. But one thing I think that doesn't get really spoken about that I've seen is just how different and overhauled this roster is from just 3 years ago. It's just, I mean, tons of freaking people that are on this roster and tons that are gone. And you know, really, I mean, we're actually finally facing, you know, John Cena taking his step away from the ring on a regular basis. You know, he's now officially announced he's a part-timer. So,
And I just realized today that he is the voice of Ferdinand in the new...
Yes.
Yep. I had no idea.
It was on a press tour for that he let slip, but he said that Yeah, that he's pretty much a part-timer in WWE.
And he's been on, I think, Good Morning America a lot and Today Show. He's been, like, co-host. I think he did the Today Show a couple weeks ago, like the 10 o'clock hour or so. So he's hopefully he'll have a nice little career after wrestling, you know, maybe not rock style, but,
I don't know. It's unrealistic to think you'll reach rock's level, but you never know.
Sure. Maybe it took a while for The Rock to get there. He did some mediocre movies and then some just bad movies. And then all of a sudden he started doing better stuff.
But that said, I have every confidence that John Cena is going to do very well. You know?
So, have y'all heard what The Rock went through, like with the bad movies, and then what turned it around?
No, I figured he just got a better manager.
That is basically what happened. He got the agent he had signed with, like, just gave him terrible, terrible direction. And
yeah, I think the tooth fairy was the turning
point.
That
whole deal, the game plan, the tooth fairy, there was supposed to be, and there was the three Disney deal. It was the game plan, the tooth fairy, and Escape from Witch Mountain, or whatever they called it. The Witch Mountain reboot that was terrible. But then his ex-wife, from what I've heard, Danny, he joined with her and like she made a plan for him, and that's when Fast and Furious came in, and then that's when all the action stuff happened. In fact, her name is on most of his movies.
Yeah, they apparently had an amicable split, because I remember even back when he was still wrestling full time, a lot of times she would be supportive of him in different ways. So that's always good to see too.
I mean, it seems to help him out. I mean, he's got a big year coming up with Jumanji and Rampage. Those are two really big movies.
It's kind of an interesting deal because it's mostly true, but there was a time there right after he did the Scorpion King that looked like it was his career was going to go in a different direction. And because he got a lot of good word on the rundown.
Yeah.
You know, and then he did
Walking
Be
Tall.
Cool. He did Walking Tall and then Be Cool. And it was then it started turning into like a downward turn until finally, after you said, you know, finally, you know, the Fast Five thing sort of redid it. But anyway, I mean, good on him. And I think that John will do fine. I mean, he certainly ain't no way going out working, and he's got the charisma and the charm. And so good for John. So yeah, that's one big thing. Like I said, we've got this incredible roster. Indeed. One of the complaints about the WWE in the past has been that, you know, you had a lot of people who didn't know how to wrestle, or they didn't wrestle very compelling matches, or they were limited, or one note, or whatever. But that's no longer the case. One thing for sure you're going to get most of the time is a really darn good match, or two or three good matches on any particular card, or Raw, or whatever. Because we got some of the best talent in the world that are working for them now. And unfortunately, they, for me, have dropped the ball in the storyline stuff for the most part. Not entirely, but in a large way, the scripted promos, and storylines are a problem. The worst thing is the announcing, but we won't get into that. Let's not get into that.
Well,
go ahead.
I am catching up, and now that I have some time off, I'll probably get caught up on everything pretty quickly. But I am basically where I am on my DVR WWE stuff is a couple weeks before Survivor Series and right after TLC.
Right.
So I'm curious, you know, there was the main one I'm curious about is Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt were supposed to have that match, and then Bray Wyatt, among several other people, got sick. So that match didn't happen, and that, and it seems like now he's going into some, a program with somebody else. So I wonder, you can spoil it for me if you want to. I don't really care. But like, did they come back to the Bray Wyatt thing, or is that kind of done?
No, they blew it off. I mean, Finn and Bray have not had nothing to do with each other since that pay per view. Yeah, which of course they didn't even meet at that pay per view because Bray wasn't there. But that pay per view turned out to be fantastic because of those sicknesses. By the way, it was a great freaking card. It was a great freaking. I love TLC.
Well, I've heard good things about TLC and Survivor Series. I haven't seen either one yet.
Yeah, Survivor Series was okay. I liked it. I really liked Survivor Series. You know, there have been some good shows, and there have been some good matches. Again, you know, and I know, because I can fall into this trap myself. Because, I mean, I especially in a microcosm, because, you know, like, I was here, a friend of mine was complaining about the tag team situation the other day, and then somebody was complaining about the women, and I said, you can't look at it. You can't. Well, first of all, you gotta have patience, and go back and look about how much has changed and how much has been improved in the last couple of years. You know, the women's division is head and shoulders where it was before. They've you know, headlined. They've main evented. They've had, you know, the first women's Hell in a Cell. They've had the first women, you know.
There's huge news from last night.
There is. That's where I was headed.
I don't know if Jonathan went. I mean, it's not really a spoiler because but it was an announcement made last night. We're recording after Monday Night Raw when this happened, but
well, don't worry about me.
Yeah, well, I say go ahead and mention it, John.
We're finally getting a women's Rumble. Rumble will have a women's Rumble match. So, yeah.
Well, there was the women's Survivor Series match, so that was kind of a step in that direction.
Yes, and the Money in the Bank match, women's Money in the Bank match, which now we had two of them.
Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell, you know, they've main evented, they've done this, there's the Abu Dhabi thing, so on and so forth, even though they couch it in the WWE way, because they're actually not the first people to have a women's match. TNA actually had that, but they are the first. They Sasha and Alexa were the first WWE women to ever wrestle in Abu Dhabi. So there's a lot of things. And the tag team scene, yeah, I have my frustrations with that too. I'm a tag team guy. I want to see some of the other teams have storylines. I want to see some of the other teams have feuds. But at the same token, we had an incredible New Day and Uso program. We had the bar just setting the bar, literally. And great feuds, you know, with the Hardys and with the Shield and so on and so forth. And it's like, just, you know, it's one of those things where I know I feel the same thing they do because we're just right there where everything could be even better. But we just have to sit back, and this is a time of reflection, and say just how much better it is. There used to be zero tag team division. Much less what they're doing now, where, you know, the Usos and the New Day are hugely over and hugely, you know, I mean, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot to be happy about, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, the new Star Wars movie, people's reaction to that reminds me of the way wrestling fans are. Yeah. Like, people don't – I saw it, and there are things I didn't like about it, but whatever, it is the movie that they made, and that – whatever I wanted it to be, it doesn't really matter. So, you know, that's how wrestling fans often are. And that's the kind of stuff that annoys me, is people can't just watch it and let it develop as it will, or see the good things. Like, not only the things you just mentioned, but also people like AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, people that I never thought we would see in WWE. Huge parts of WWE now.
Yes.
And even Bobby Roode, you know, people like that from the indie scene or from Ring of Honor, Japan, TNA, that just seemed like they were going to finish out their careers and do pretty well for themselves, but never make it. They were going to be like Sting was for so many years, basically.
And see, exactly. And here's the thing that gives me a lot of hope and promise about all this, because they're not just being one-dimensional about it. I said earlier, there are definitely areas that they can tweak and improve and certainly need to. But one of the areas they don't is the variety that they provide. Because, I mean, they're allowing guys like AJ and Finn Balor and them to be over and to wrestle and work, even though they're not the traditional WWE type. But at the same token, they've brought back a character like, you know, Strowman, who's way over in wrestling his type of match. You know, the big, powerful, monster, strong guy matches. Which, you know, you don't want everything to be exactly the same. So, I mean, you turn around and you have Braun Strowman here, and then you have Finn Balor over here, and it gives you a great variety, I think.
Well, they even had a good match not long ago.
Yeah, they did. Yes.
Right after TLC, I think.
Yes. Richard,
I think Braun Strowman is the MVP of this year. I mean, I think he's what Luke Harper should have been given. In this role, you know, I mean, Luke Harper, I realize, is not as tall, I don't think, or empowering as far as, I mean, Braun, they just do a really good job of making Braun look like a monster, and they talk him up.
Yeah.
I really wish Harper would have gotten that, something like that, or at least a good single run instead of the disaster, the tag team Blood that he's brothers. A part of now. It's awful. I mean, I'm a horror guy, and I love cheesy stuff, but the Bludgeon Brothers, I'm out.
I love them. I think their
finisher is sloppy.
Yes, that I agree with that, yes.
Their finisher is so sloppy. Even when they do it right, it just does not look
good.
No,
it's a bad finisher.
They should throw him into the ropes and then do it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
And it would make them look much more powerful.
Here's the deal. I mean, and I get it. You know, your mileage may vary for, you know, the gimmick changes and the hammers and the new green gear and this, that, and the other. But fact of the matter is that I've been a fan of these two as a tag team for a long, long time. They really are a damn good tag team. One of those tag teams that didn't really, that have been a great tag team that didn't get sort of the talk up that some others have. But they were having matches with the Shield and the Usos back when. Incredible matches.
Yes.
Memorable matches.
They had Shield matches. I love the Shield.
Yeah,
and
they had an incredible Uso match, if you recall. It was incredible. So, I mean, these guys are good as a tag team. What I'd love to see Harper finally get is, you know, a good singles run, you know, as a major player, certainly, because he deserves it and he's great. But right now, I think he would get lost in the shuffle, and I think he's better served by being in a dominant tag team that eventually is going to go and get the titles from the Usos, you know. And that's good for me. You know,
I like his look with the hair pulled back and kind of a ponytail with the other hair. Like I like that.
Yeah. And boy. my man is ugly. He is an ugly, ugly man.
Who, Rowan?
Yes. But it's great. It's great that he's ugly. This is again the variety.
I mean, it works.
And I just, we haven't had a tag team like that since I can, when's the last time we had a tag team like that? It's this dominant world warrior type come in, smash everybody and destroy everything.
So for me, I think, I mean, I love War Machine. Right. And I just feel like it's War Machine.
Well, yeah. Sure, of course it is.
but I just feel
nothing new about that.
But I mean, I just feel like I don't know. I mean, like the big hammers, like I don't know. It's just not for me, and that's fine. And their outfits look like Kane, but I mean, I just I'm just not into it.
I admit, I thought about the fact that they look like Kane, but admittedly, I liked them. It was different, you know. It was a step in another direction, not necessarily better direction. I liked the way they looked before, but And the hammers, it's just, I mean, it's wrestling. You know, that's just the thing they carry to the ring like other people's carry other stuff in the bed.
So they used to focus.
Yeah, Hacksaw Dugan used to bring a 2x4, you know, so.
Well, I know, but don't you think that's a little bit more realistic than giant mallet hammers that look like they were made for a movie? Like,
what is the game? What is the old 80s game with the hammers? What is
Whack-a-mole?
No. That's all even older. I mean the video game. Whack-a-mole. There you go. It's even better. Whack-a-mole. It's Whack-a-mole.
I wonder if they'll ever... You know, a lot of the kind of horror gimmicks end up becoming comedy gimmicks.
Yes.
See them doing
too.
That's what I
could see them having, you know, having them in an arcade playing whack-a-mole with their giant hammers.
If it was going to happen anytime soon, it was going to happen Sunday night when they took on Brazango.
Oh yeah.
And it did not happen.
Yeah, I saw
they
that.
They destroyed Brazango.
I haven't actually seen them wrestle yet. Like I said, where I am is a little over a month ago.
They don't really wrestle. They just go in and demolish the guys because they're wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, big names. I mean, like Brazango, but jobbers. I mean, they just give them wrestlers to destroy. So they really haven't had any competition yet.
No.
Have they wrestled the Ascension?
Not yet. They'll probably be next because of the Brazango thing.
Yeah, but I mean they're kind of similar in style, and maybe the Ascension can redeem themselves somehow.
I don't know. I love
Dream on, Jonathan. Dream on.
Yeah, Kevin Nash buried them.
Yeah, he
and
did.
Everybody. Well, that whole group did.
Yeah, they did. It was awful.
So anyway, but Braun, I mean, yeah, Braun's doing great, and I've loved most all of his matches. I really love the four-way match that was done back in summer. Do you remember which one that one was, John? The Braun and Brock and
Braun, Brock, Samoa Joe, and
Roman
Reigns.
Roman, yes.
So that was a fantastic match for all those guys, for big guys. I mean, what a great way to book a match. I mean, just really, really solid. And, I loved it.
I did, too. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't, and you guys didn't do it. You didn't even know it was there, Jonathan. But, on the world-famous Facebook page of the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, go check it out and join us and join in the conversation. But our old pal Nick Hallheim over there, he has a article that he usually writes at the end of the year about, you know, and he wants people to vote or put in their list of their top favorite wrestlers. I put actually 25. I won't go into a full 25, but I want to list my top 12. We'll go with my top 12. There's just a couple names in the top 12 I want to mention. This is my top 12 wrestlers of all 2017. As I said in the in my post, that it's going to be WWE eccentric, heavy, because I just still don't get to see as much wrestling outside of WWE as I probably need to or I want to. And also it's going to reflect my love of tag team, and it's going to reflect. Sometimes I'm real bad about these type of lists, whether it's wrestling or movies or TV or anything else. I have a problem remembering back to the early part of the year. So sometimes I cut somebody's legs off out from under them. As a matter of fact, me and Ray Garner was discussing it while I was watching the last pay-per-view, Clash of the Champions. I was remarking that last year Matt Hardy was my number one. And that this year he wasn't even on my list. But then Ray was like saying, well, you know, he was still doing some of the broken stuff. And then they did all the tag team belts all over the indie scene. And they had the great stuff with with ROH, and the titles with the Young Bucks. And then they had the incredible WrestleMania appearance. And then they won the titles and so on and so forth. And yeah, that's true. I should have had Matt on my list.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind here with the ones I got here. Number one is AJ Styles. AJ is just, I do truly believe he's the best wrestler in the world. He can get a match out of anybody. And he just, every single one of his matches, I just love. You know, he just does a great job. He's really over. The people love him. And we interviewed him.
Yeah, that was a year ago.
Yeah, but yeah, a year ago.
Yeah,
a year
ago, it was the last show.
The great year he had last year, 1 year ago. So yeah,
here we go again. And, you know, and it's funny because, you know, he's now again the WWE champion. But it's really weird because not once have I heard any of the announcers or any of the people mention that this is his second reign.
Hmm.
It just seems odd to me because usually you'll say something like that. You know, I kept expecting him to say, you know, even AJ himself, he doesn't mention that he won it again or whatever. And he doesn't outright say like this is the first time he's won it, but it just kind of comes off that way, which is kind of weird. My number two and number three are Jimmy and Jey Uso, who I just love those guys. I have been a fan of them since they first appeared, but since they've revamped themselves in this whole new, you know, look and feel to them, they have just really, really took it to a whole other level. I love their promos. I love their style. And, of course, the ring work has always been great. And they, in the New Day, really, really just fired up the tag team scene this year. And I, of course, always going to be grateful for that. My number four is Asuka. What else can I say? Even though Richard may not agree, I love Asuka. She's great. Number five, Kenny Omega, who's actually one of the New Japan guys that I've actually been able to get to see a lot of, and he is everything that everybody says he is. He's great. Cesaro and Sheamus are 6 and 7, again, because of the same reason. The bar, we're doing what the Usos were over on SmackDown, they were doing over on Raw. They are an incredible tag team. Number eight is Neville, who did an incredible job as the Cruiserweight champion. I loved his new look. I loved his new character. I loved his whole freaking style. I loved him so much, and I just hate the idea that he might be going away. But number nine is Kevin Owens, and 10 is Sami Zayn. I'm so happy that they're working together. You can tell that they really enjoy, obviously, because we know they're real good friends, and they're really seem fired up about it. And the whole Yep movement is just too hilarious. And they're in an intriguing situation now with this whole thing with them and Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. And I know we're not doing the prediction part yet. We're doing the predictions at the end. But I think Kevin and Sammy are turning face. I really do. I think before 2018 is over with, they're going to be face. And number 11 is Braun Strowman, who we've already mentioned. And number 12, The Miz, who, again, last year finally come out of his doldrums and became The Miz of the old with the whole new twist. And he is just slaying it and has been slaying it as the IC champ over in Raw. And can't say enough good things about The Miz. So there you go.
Well, he's gone for a little bit now.
Yeah, he's doing the Marine. He's doing the Marine. Therefore, that matter, so is Becky Lynch.
And somebody else too.
HBK, but he's not gone. He's doing the film.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, HBK and Becky Lynch, which makes me sad. Makes me very sad. I love Becky Lynch.
So you mentioned Kenny Omega, and I, you know, we don't talk a whole lot. I mean, none of us really get. I mean, we get to see me and Jonathan watch the Access TV stuff, and so we get to see him wrestle, but. It's just harder to have storylines and such.
Right.
You just get really good matches. But, I mean, and I hate that Facebook spoiled it for me, but that's kind of the only way you see stuff like that really anymore. But the Chris Jericho.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, that's just going to be the best. I love how they did it. They turned off the lights. They did a countdown kind of thing. They showed Jericho. Jericho, you know, never ceases to amaze me. I mean, he's changed his character in just two seconds. Like, he's not the List Jericho guy. He's another guy.
He is.
Like, I don't know how he does it. I just don't know how he does it. I mean, the man can even wear, I don't even know what they're called because I don't have any hair, but he can even wear one of those things that girls wear, and people still think he's cool.
Yes, they do.
I mean, he put it back in on this last attack of Kenny Omega.
I mean, he beat the shit out of Kenny Omega, blooded him up, and had Cyrus, the virus, taken off on a stretcher, and then he puts his little beret back in his head.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, it was great. And something I want to let the listeners know about if they don't know, if you do have access, I don't know how you pronounce that TV channel.
But A-X-X-E-S-S.
Yeah, the channel that New Japan Pro Wrestling comes on, so they're doing a one-of-a-kind thing. I'm going to get the dates messed up, but when Wrestle Kingdom happens, which I think is on the 4th, of January, it's going to have the Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega match, but just 2 days later, because I think it happens on a Thursday, so 2 days later on Saturday, or maybe Friday, but I feel like it's Saturday. Anyway, check your local listings, but Access is going to show 3 hours of Wrestle Kingdom 2 days after it airs
live. That's right.
Live.
I actually saw the Mark Cuban talk about that. So,
yeah, so it's a huge deal. Like it this is a big step.
It's a
big step. And New Japan is looking to tour America. Like they're wanting to do more stuff here, and I can't wait. I mean, I'll just be happy another promotion, you know, we get more of that stuff, and I really hope Josh Barnett is not an announcer much longer. He is.
You know, it's funny.
Terrible.
It's funny.
Do you like him, Jonathan?
He's okay. He doesn't offend me, but
I love Jim Ross so much, and I just don't think they have any chemistry.
What does Kevin Kelly do? Because
Cyrus do?
Jim Ross had pointed out one time in one of the recent episodes I watched that like the wrestlers just almost hit Kevin Kelly. So if he's not doing the English commentary, what's he doing?
I think they are doing English commentary, but not for America, if that makes sense, maybe. I mean, I think they do it for the stuff that they air on their channel thing.
When I watched the NATO, actually I watched all of the G7 or GA or G7, whatever.
G1 climax?
G1. One of those numbers.
B42. G1. Bingo.
Yes. the announcers were Don Callis and Kevin Kelly. So I don't know where that source comes from or what it is, but.
But I think when Kevin Kelly left ROH, well, even when he was in ROH, and when we talked to him this year, because we got to interview Kevin Kelly, which was awesome. He was very cool. And actually, we interviewed him like a week, I think, before he left ROH.
That's right. Yeah, we did.
So that was kind of cool timing.
How come he couldn't have scooped us?
I know, right? So I think he was doing stuff for them, for their website and for their on-demand stuff and such like, and that kind of stuff. Because, you can – so if you purchase Wrestle Kingdom, I think you will hear Kevin Kelly.
Saying? The big difference is here is that Don Callis and Kevin Kelly are calling it live there in Japan.
Yes.
Whereas Jim Ross
they're
and
in a
Barnett
studio.
Are doing it in a studio here after it's already been taped.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Dubbing it. Yes.
But so, JR has said that, he doesn't watch it beforehand, and he's going to try to avoid everything, all the spoilers he can before he actually sees it.
Oh, yeah. That's Jerry's style. Yeah, he's... JR style. That's definitely
That's cool.
Now, JR didn't want to know anything about what was happening in WWE.
JR's podcast is actually really good too. If you don't listen to it, it's really different. He's a great. I mean, this shouldn't surprise anybody, but he's a great interviewer. Like he's really down to earth. He doesn't. I mean, he doesn't belittle people or anything like that. It's just a good conversation, and he lets you know about people that you may not know. So,
yeah, I've been listening to it since he began it, and there was some criticism from some people, which I thought was stupid, but they didn't like it because he griped a little bit too much about the old school, you know, not being around, and griped about things not being, you know, old school enough anymore, which, of course, was right down my alley, so I liked it, so screw them. And then, two, for whatever reason, they had problems with him doing his accents and stuff, and I love him doing Terry Funk. So, anyway, it's great. You egg-sucking dog!
But, so, yeah, I'm very excited about the Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho match.
I was going to say something about that, in that I think there's no question that this is a forerunner for them to enter the United States market. And not only because, yeah, it's one of the biggest names in WWE history, in Chris Jericho, you know, certainly, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer when it comes around to that. And then Kenny Omega, certainly the biggest name in indie wrestling. And so that's going to get tickets in the United States, you know, and so on and so forth. But not only that, but the kind of match that this has turned into. Because they've made it this sort of dual main event, where the top main event, though, is going to be straight up old school, strong style Japanese wrestling between Naito and Okada. But this match has turned into a classic American blood feud.
Well, it's no DQ now, too.
So I mean, it's again adding the variety, and it's giving you two different kind of flavors there. So, yeah, very, very excited about that. That's big news. Yep. So anyway, Jonathan, you guys anything to say about 2017, particularly?
Well, we've already talked about a lot of the things that I would have pointed out as far as WWE goes. I think there are certain fans that it's never going to be good enough for them.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, really. You should expect a lot out of the top company.
Well, sure.
I do wish.
My issue is that you can be negative. You can certainly be honest about the things that you don't like. I mean, there's definitely things I don't like, and I'd say that I don't like it. My problem is that too many of them all they ever do is complain. All they ever do is talk about the negative, and it just seems like they're ignoring or looking past a lot of the positives that are still there, you know.
Yeah, and most of those people are the same people that never bought any Samoa Joe merchandise
right, when
he was in TNA or Ring of Honor. But they got the first WWE Samoa Joe shirt that came out.
right. yes.
I don't know. I think it was outside. I think we were repeating a lot of stuff that we talked about last year. But outside of WWE, the women's wrestling has continued to be a big part of Ring of Honor.
Yep.
With Women of Honor.
And they have their own title now.
They got a new title, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
I mean, they announced it on Facebook. I don't think they've done anything. I think they actually did announce it at Final Battle. But, I mean, I've seen it on Facebook. But, yeah, they have the Women of Honor title now.
Speaking of that, man, I so desperately want Rosemary to get away from Impact and go to WWE or ROH or somewhere that she would be far more... I won't say appreciate it. I'm sure that the TNA fans that are still left out there appreciate her, but where she can get a bigger appreciation, you know, a wider audience, because I mean, how perfect would it have been if they would have announced her as Sister Abigail?
Well, that's what I was actually going to mention. Impact Wrestling, Global Force Wrestling. I don't know if you guys even watch it, because a lot of people don't even have the channel that it comes on, but I DVR it and watch it, and I think... Rosemary and Kaya Valkyrie, they've been a big highlight of the show. I like both of them a lot, and I think both of them are going to end up somewhere else eventually.
Good question. It's but just a wasn't matter of time. Yeah.
Wasn't Rosemary in WWE developmental at some point? Because I've heard that there was a Sister Abigail, or someone that was being groomed to be Sister Abigail, and then somebody decided they didn't want, like, a scary female wrestler. They wanted them all to be athletic and pretty or whatever. But I think she's pretty, too, so...
I think she's absolutely... She's hotter than hell.
And she's completely over...
I want that woman to drag me to hell.
Well, it was hard to tell the way she used to do her face paint, but now she leaves... She just does, like, her nose and mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see enough of her face and her eyes, and her hair is really cool. You can see enough now. You can see, like, oh, she's actually attractive.
Yes, but more importantly, she just looks cool as hell. You know,
yeah.
And it, she's got a
presence. Really over.
As she should be, because she's just amazing. So, yeah, that's one thing I hope. And despite that, really, I mean, and we said this last year, too, but it's only more so again. There is a wrestling boom going on. It's just, it's not as the same as it has been before. We're seeing it more from a bottom up rather than the top down as it has been in the past. Indie wrestling is as strong as it has ever been. And it's spread to, you know, all I know, and I'm pretty sure that every state and union probably has, you know, at least one, and many, several indie promotions and so on and so forth. And then you've got the new sort of unified wrestling federation taking over from the NWA. You got the new NWA starting up under, you know, Billy Corgan. You know, Lucha Underground still popular. ROH is as popular as it has ever been. New Japan is making huge moves. Financially, WWE is doing as good as it ever has, though there's some house shows that are, you know, attendance problems, but that'll change. Really, the only one that really kind of stumbled was TNA, but that's just been a long time coming. You know, that was just, and then, you know, they had this one last gasp, and that kind of got all screwed up because of Jeff Jarrett, and that's just, you know.
Well, I have enjoyed what I've been seeing recently with Impact Wrestling, and I like what they're trying to do with Global Force, which is basically like an NWA kind of thing where that's all these different federations around the world are cross promoting, and you know, they will air matches from other promotions occasionally on Impact, and they brought in Johnny Impact, who
you do know out. that whole thing is no more, right?
Oh no! Again, I'm like,
Jeff Jarrett got Jeff Jarrett was having issues. And,
I knew about that.
And then he got suspended, and then he got fired, and then he took the Global Force stuff back with him. So, whatever ties there was between Impact and Global Force no longer exists.
And now he's in rehab, WWE rehab.
Yeah, he's in WWE.
Wow.
Well,
yeah. They're forgiving with that rehab thing, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, anyway, I liked what was going on with it. For me, that's in the present. That's
probably the worst show for you to come back on, isn't it?
I tried to get caught up, but it just isn't possible.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I forget where I was going with all that. But I guess that was it. Like, it's
Good problem.
Yeah, I don't.
That's
I
my
don't
whole problem. That's my whole problem with that whole brand, and have been for a long, long time, is that every time it shows promise, something screws it up, something messes it up.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I just gave up on it long ago, because I just seen it. It's too many times I allowed it to get me excited and allowed myself to get caught up in it, only to be let down over and over again. I was like, that's it. They need to go away. They need to go away.
I think a lot of people gave up on it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I don't have like a top 10 or 12 list like you had, but I do think that Johnny Impact, Johnny Mundo, elsewhere, I think he's had a great year, even though it hasn't been in the spotlight we're used to seeing him in, maybe.
Real quick, I got a little side note here. Okay, so in the local wrestling, Charlie Haas is a regular, and the fans have a regular chant. Shelton does it better, or Shelton is better. which, of course, Charlie sells wonderfully by, you know, his manager covering his ears, and he's just like, he can't, you know, stand it, you know. But last Friday, Joey Mercury made his debut in the local, in our local area, and I kept trying to get a Johnny Mundo or Johnny Nitro did it better.
Yeah, you just have to figure out which name to chant.
Which name, yes. Right. anyway, go ahead. Yes, he's done a great job. I haven't got to see near as much as him in life, but I've been a fan of his forever. So,
well, when he came into Impact, he was the AAA champion, I believe. He was a champion in Mexico somewhere.
Yeah, AAA, yeah.
And then I think he held the Impact title or something. But anyway, you know, yes. I think he brought something there that was missing, and I don't even know, is he still there or is he gone?
I don't know. Honestly, don't know.
Well, anyway, he's had a good year. You mentioned Tetsuya Naito from New Japan, who won the G1 Climax by defeating Kenny Omega, which I just watched that match last week. So, you know, the Bullet Club is huge, but I think Los Incobernables de Japón, which is a mouthful, I think it seems to me, in Japan at least, that they rival the popularity of the Bullet Club, and they're very similar factions.
Yes.
So it was a leader of each faction came down to them in the finals of the G1, and that was a great match.
Evil's getting them starting to rise up on popularity too. So.
Yeah, I mean the whole group seems to be.
Yeah. Whole group, not just him, but yeah, everybody, whatever they call themselves.
Of course. One of my favorites is Dalton Castle, and from what I gather, he's the champion.
He is the new ROH champion. Yes, be Cody
but
Rhodes.
At the same time, Cody had a great year.
Oh, Cody! Yes, indeed. I'm glad. Yeah, definitely. Cody did a fantastic, great year. Hey, I'm going to put a little shout out here. I mean, Tim Storm, who is has been a local guy here for a long time, and actually has a stake in our local area. He won the NWA Championship and has held it most of all of this year, has did a great job. And then when Corgan took over, or, you know, kept him as the champ, kept the legacy going, and they did these great, you know, YouTube videos and so on and so forth, telling the story of Tim and the fact that he's 52 years old and the oldest man to ever win the NWA title. And the fact that he's a school teacher and basically just really told the human side of his story and got a lot of people, you know, to know him and to get him. And then he recently just lost the title to Nick Aldis, a.k.a. Magnus. Tim had a great year, too. So.
Is Magnus still married to Mickie James?
I assume so. I haven't heard anything different. But I don't know that for a fact. Oh, and by the way, big news, Bully Ray retired. He did a retirement angle, which I knew was setting up a final match, and it seems like that's going to be the blow-off. That's going to be it for Bully, with the big Briscoes versus Dreamer and Bully Ray match to this last final conflict.
Oh. Whatever it was. Too bad it couldn't have been D-Von and Bully Ray.
Devon's a backstage guy at WWE now. He's a producer. But yeah, it would have been great. Yeah, but I think Devon has definitely 100% retired. Well, I know he has because he's got the job backstage. Now, I did hear a rumor today. As usual, there's a supposed leak of potential Hall of Famers to join the 2018 class. One of those is the Dudleys. Is potentially one of the ones. Goldberg probably is the headliner, potentially. Ivory, which love that, you know. Who else? Ivory. Dudley's. Oh, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Gosh, he's not in?
Yeah, no,
that's a shame.
No, not. It's like, you know, Rick Rude, you know, last year finally got in, and, you know, so.
I mean, part of me really wishes that Bully Ray had a run in WWE, but, I mean, I get why they didn't do that character in WWE. I mean, maybe Vince just didn't like it, but they probably did not like the bully in the name.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I feel like that would have been bad for sponsorships and things that WWE has done for that movement, whatever you think about them doing.
See,
that movement.
I get that, but at the same token, that's, to me, only half thinking. If you have the heel be a bully, and then he gets his comeuppance for it, and you point out the fact that, yes, he's bad because he's a bully, isn't that giving your message across?
Yeah, but how many times has the crowd turned...
That's true.
...a heel into a babyface? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we don't have any facts on that, but I would guess maybe Vince just didn't see him as a... But he was doing some incredible stuff as Bully Ray in TNA.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible.
Absolutely.
I mean, yep. I mean, I think that was some of his best work outside of early ECW Dudley Boy stuff.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So yeah.
Yep,
and
I agree.
And there's a TNA Bully Ray figure that is very expensive.
Well, I think the worst, though, is there.
I mean, it's crazy to think that Jax was still making action figures of TNA when Bully Ray was around. But they were, and those figures are very expensive for TNA figures.
Have you seen that Dixie Carter one? They were trying to sell it as, like, a, you know, this... as if it would be highly collectible, and it was on the clearance page last time I saw it on Shop TNA or whatever it's called now.
That's all. So it was an exclusive to Shop TNA. So they probably have a ton of them.
Yeah. You could probably email somebody there and just say you want one, and they'd send you one just to get rid of.
Probably.
Okay. So, on the bully thing, one of the other reasons why it might have been iffy, if they were to go, would it be the same? Because could they really let Bully let loose on the mic, you know, the way that he can do? I mean, I'm sure Bully can do it and pull it back, but would it be the same? Would it be quite as good? But, you know, and actually, here's the deal. I heard, actually, that they were considering doing that. And so I don't think necessarily there was a problem with it. And again, I don't want to talk out of school here because I don't know this for a fact. But I heard rumors that one of the things that kind of caused him to decide just to go when their contract came up was that they wouldn't hire his wife, I think. And so,
are they married?
Our girlfriend is
Velvet Sky,
his babe, his woman, however you want to use it, because she was involved in this last feud of his with the Briscoe brothers and everything. So.
Oh, I haven't. Spoiler alert.
Well, I already told you that was the whole retirement angle.
Yeah, but I haven't seen where she got involved yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, anyway,
that's okay.
She doesn't get involved. She doesn't. I was mistaken about that.
Have you seen The Last Jedi? Because I'll spoil it for you.
I'm not a Star Wars guy. I don't give a damn. So.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't hate Star Wars, but I am no Star Wars guy. I'm a Star Trek guy. But okay, now, real quick, and I think we'll probably need to wrap up here. We've been talking for a while. Now... this could be a very big spoiler for you. But you were talking about Finn Balor and the aborted Bray Wyatt feud. Bray is now got a new feud started with somebody that we've all missed for most of the year.
I've heard about it, and yes, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Oh, yeah. His promo last night was delightful.
He's not broken anymore, though.
Oh, he's not broken.
What is he?
He's woken.
that's okay. Yeah, I was trying to remember what spin they put on it.
Well, the deal with that is that he, you know, Matt actually owns the broken thing now. Finally, the whatever that company said they gave in and they gave him the control of it. But you know, WWE likes to, you know, own whatever content that they have. So they made a deal with him that they'll do the Woken character, which is very similar, but not exactly the same. So they can sell merchandise and so on and so forth and own it. But then when the day comes that, you know, Matt goes back to the Indies, he'll have the broken thing he can do. So it's, it works out good for everybody. And but as long as we got Matt doing these crazy interviews and promos, it's all fine.
How he's teased it sort of for months now. Like,
yes.
And sometimes it's not even them doing it. It's the audience. Yes. You start chanting delete and stuff.
Yep.
Indeed. And they have to acknowledge it.
Yes, they do.
Now, did you see one of the I think it was their first or second promo against each other where it was going back and forth between Matt Hardy and Bray?
That was the first one.
And they were laughing. So you get the weird Matt Hardy, and the Bray Wyatt.
And the Bray Wyatt. And then the newest one, last night, he was playing a chess game against Napoleon, who's in the form of a goldfish. Reincarnated as a goldfish.
Gosh.
Who knew that Matt was this freaking talented? And he was always talented, but this imaginative, you know. But I kind of knew because I didn't know for years, but when I got to know a little bit more about their background, and the whole Omega thing, all the Omega idea stuff was Matt, you know. I mean, he's the guy that comes up with those type of ideas. Jeff's just, you know, got the charisma and the look and the style and, of course, the crazy ring ability. So.
And he's creative with music and art.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, very, very creative with music and art. But the two of them together are really, really talented and excellent guys. And I'm very happy that they've returning to the WWE and getting good money and are going to get to do their thing. And now that he's doing Woken, as much as it would be cool if he came in as Brother Nero, this gives them a chance to him for Jeff to go off and do the whole Enigma thing and put his makeup on and put the glow in the dark stuff on, maybe get into a program with Finn Balor. How cool would that be? You know, the demon,
Enigma. Yeah. That's got to happen. Yeah. And they did team up not long ago, a few months.
Oh, yeah, I put up the picture. They did this great, they did the pose together where they're all doing, and it, you know, doing the thing to, you know, the moment where Finn puts his arms up and all the lights are on and all the fans do it. And, of course, he's up there on the top rope doing it. And then the second on the top of the steps, you've got Jeff doing his thing with the closed eyes and the arms stretched out. And then the very bottom on the ring side, you've got, you know, Matt doing his broken type of stance, you know.
Maybe they'll bring back Willow.
Yeah, they could do that. Yeah, sure. Actually, speaking of that, they're all of that. They're the current newest that dropped this last Monday or last night. Dinner for Three is actually Matt and Jeff with Finn Balor, and they talk about all of their alter egos and the different things that they've done. But again, you know, like I said, you know, Matt, that did Matt 2.0 back in the early 90s or mid 90s, like early 2000s. Sorry.
I was going to say, whoa.
Hey, wait. He's not that old. Now, the early 2000s, he did Matt 2.0, which was incredibly creative as well.
It's great.
Yeah. So, all right. So,
I would like to kind of, maybe not talk about it in long form or anything, but just go around and talk about some of our favorite things for the podcast that we've done this year.
Oh, okay. And then I wasn't completely into it, but we'll do that, and then we'll come around, and then everybody will predict a couple of things or not predictions or, you know, hopes for what 2019 might bring for wrestling and our podcast. So, go ahead. You go start. You want to start, you do it.
Well, one of my favorite moments happened early on was our interview with Jay Lethal that Jonathan got us.
Yes.
I mean, to give a little insight to how it all works, you know, Jonathan reaches out to people, and sometimes me and John do too, but Jonathan certainly has done more than we have on the interview circuit thing, and...
Heck, I've only done it just the last couple of months.
I mean, I can get Isaac Kane back on.
Isaac's great.
I mean, he'll come back on. I mean, yeah, Isaac's great. He's a great friend of the show.
Hey,
and that's the other thing.
On the poll, he said he never misses their show.
Yeah, so, and I mean,
good for you, Isaac. Hey, Isaac, thumbs up to you, my man. You're great.
Oh yeah, I mean that's. I mean, you know, before I get into the Jay Lethal thing, like the friends we've met and gained, you know, Isaac Kane, Christy Petrillo, who has only been on the show a few times, but has become a really good friend of mine.
Does your show?
Yeah, I mean, he does the Nerdy Laser podcast with me, and I mean, we've just Jerry and Jeff and. Joe Crow, who is hilarious and helps me and John with the skits. Mm-hmm. But going back to Jay Lethal, most of the time we get them on and, you know, we'll ask how long or whatever. And some of the lesser, you know, independent guys and stuff that are really excited to talk to us, they'll stay on however long. But most of the people that you all recognize as a name, they're very usually like 10, 20 minutes or whatnot. I mean, AJ Styles certainly was that way. I mean, we had to talk to somebody else, and they told us how long and such. So
that's because it was a WWE thing.
It was a WWE thing, but even in Ring of Honor is certainly a lot looser than that. But Jay Lethal talked to us for, I think, 40, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was very gracious. Just, I mean, he actually thanked us. Like, I mean, it was a weird, it was this weird thing because it was actually sincere, you know? Like, Jay's a great guy. Like, you can tell just by that interview. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it because it really, he really is a fan of the business. And he's a wrestler and he's had action figures and I mean all the stuff he is living his dream, you know, and I love Jay Lethal. I mean, I always have. In TNA he was great. I mean, I'd like to see him get a big payday with WWE, but the other thing that happened this year was a lot of indie guys are making their own money. They're making their own business.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier about how really the indie thing has just blown up in a huge way. I mean, the Bullet Club are, you know, selling, you know, T-shirts at the, Hot Topic. I mean,
they're getting their own Funko Pop figures next year.
Oh, are they?
Omega and Young Bucks are getting their own. Japan is basically signing a deal with Hot Topic. And you can actually buy the Vigilante Club shirt that Stephen Amell wears when he was with the Bullet Club or against the Bullet Club or whatever that little scenario was. It's officially a Hot Topic, so they're making, I mean...
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I assumed it was a deal with Ring of Honor at first, and then I found out it's a New Japan deal with Hot Topic.
Well, and it's pro wrestling. Most of these shirts that are being sold are actually pro wrestling tees shirts.
Yeah.
So they're really a deal with anybody. I mean, it's just this whole... it's this weird, like...
tees has changed the whole...
It really has.
For a lot of indie guys.
Yeah. And I have really no interest in going to Chicago just because I don't have anything. I mean, it's a big city. It'd be cool to go to. But I would. They have a brick and mortar store now, and I would love to go.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Pro Wrestling Tees does.
Yes, and they do. They do signings. They have wrestlers there all the time. They had Kenny Omega there. They have wrestlers there. They have old, new, future. Like, yeah, Pro Wrestling Tees is. It's pretty big deal. It's a pretty big deal.
That's really, it's really helped a lot of indie guys make their dreams come true and make a living on doing this and really
do
very well. Yeah,
their way
on their dime and that's a really good thing.
Where they're not beating up their bodies.
But it's just like saying, and really, you're kind of almost like Back to the Territory days, to where some of these indie guys, you know, are moving around. I mean, Tyson Dean, who's done a lion's share of his wrestling in Georgia, was here in Dallas, Texas, yep. or not Dallas, Texas, Sherman, Texas, you know, this last year, along with Joey Mercury and obviously pushing the whole, because they had a deal for the next day to Good Brothers, dojo, you know, tryouts for people to, you know, to learn a little something, you know, come and, you know, meet them and talk to them about joining, you know, becoming wrestlers. And one of the guys that comes here often is Lance Kay. No, not Lance Kay, Lance Hoyt, who is currently the one of the IWGP Tag Team Champions, along with David Boy Smith's
son. As Vance Archer, right?
Yeah, as Vance Archer there, yes. But here's Lance Hoyt, and has been wrestling here for a while. But, I mean, the War Machine have been through here, you know. So it's just really cool, you know, that you know, everywhere, no matter where you're at, you're getting to see some of these indie talents moving around. I mean, it's, you know, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, you know, they work in New Japan, they work in ROH, but they're not tied to either one of those companies. They're not contracted to either one of them as being exclusive. So they get to go everywhere, and that's a really cool thing.
Well, we got off topic again, which is what we're
my
good
big
at.
Moment. My big moment, one of my big moments, was our conversation with Jake the Snake Roberts. Partially because I'm a huge fan of Jake the Snake. I mean, he's one of those guys that I watched when I was younger and left a huge impression upon me. One of the best to ever do it, in my opinion. Unique. In completely unique. Nobody was ever like him before he came along. But I was surprised because I assume, like you were talking about, that it would be just this brief, you know, just sort of matter of fact thing, which would be fine because it was Jake the Snake Roberts. That's all I cared about. We were going to get to talk to Jake the Snake Roberts, which was going to be like a mark out moment for me, but also great for the podcast. But then he just opened up. He just started talking deep stuff. And that was just very, very cool. So, I mean, I was very happy about that.
Was that this year or last year?
There's no way that was this year.
Well, yeah. Never mind, Ken.
No. It's still important to mention. It's still important to mention just because that was like before we were even interviewing people, really. And, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, you know, that was a big one for us. And he talked for like 20 minutes. And that one almost didn't happen. I mean, Jonathan had to drive out there.
No, Jonathan really was a trooper on that one. He really, really made that connection happen.
Yeah.
Could have been easily at the one point to give up on that. But
I did.
You
I left.
Did. You left.
That's right. You did. And you got called back. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was getting ready to go
right
back to bed.
That was good. That was good. Okay, so I can't think of anything else this year. It's been a really dull year.
Well, I think the Jay Lethal interview was kind of the impetus for us talking about action figures, which became a big thing. Because
mm-hmm.
Richard, you asked him, you talked to him a good bit about his various action figures.
Oh, yeah, because he's had a ton.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was one of the first Ring of Honor ones.
Yeah, then, and I think it's actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think I saw it on sale on Amazon right now for $12.99, which is crazy cheap. So if you're, and I think the Kevin Steen figure is actually on sale as well. So if you want some figure toy company figures, look around, and they just released a whole ton of them. Yeah, it's $14.99, so that's half price of what it usually is. That's with free shipping with Prime. So, check them out. I mean, it's a great figure as well.
So was our female wrestling three-parter, was that last year too?
No, it was this year.
Other than that one.
This year we did a lot of, so between the female, we did a lot of series as far as we did the female series. We did the action figure series, which is still ongoing. We've talked about New Japan. We've talked about, you know, we're breaking things up and talking about more specific subjects. So I think that's really cool. I think we've...
And I love our reviews of the older shows.
I love all of it. I love the movie reviews. I love the... Yeah. I love the... I mean, sometimes...
Your pick next for the pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah. Well, so we're going to have... I know if we can work out all of our schedules, I know Jeff and Scott over the figures... over the Fully Posable podcast want to come back and do a... time travel episode where we go back and look at a pay-per-view. So it'll probably be an 80s WWF.
You know, if they want to be part of it, ask them if they want to pick, you know.
Yeah, I could do that. And they just hit their 100th episode, which is huge. So they've been around for as long as we have, pretty much.
A whole lot of fun. I love going in that way about the gene.
Yeah, and I love the movie reviews, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Really fun.
Oh, yeah.
So
we didn't do the one we were going to do. We were going to do a Christmas movie.
I know we haven't done it and probably won't. But what was that, Jonathan?
Were we going to do the Christmas movie with the Miz and Paige that came out a few years ago for the Hallmark Channel or whatever?
Oh gosh!
No, well, we were going to do the Hogan.
We were going to do the Santa with Muscles.
Santa with Muscles. Yes.
But
We'll do it next year.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we need to.
Because those are fun. I mean, what I'd really like to do one time is do, which every podcast seems to be doing it now, so it's not as, because I thought we could do this back when we started, and we probably would have been one of the first if we had done it, but now they do it a lot, but where we watch the movie and provide commentary and just talk about it.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, that could be fun. So
you could do that with the pay-per-view, too.
We could, but the pay-per-view, I would rather do that with, like, an hour show.
That's true.
Because I feel like a three-hour one, and we just start talking about movies or something. But which would be fine, too. But, like, a cool an old ECW episode would be fun, or something like that that
haven't seen. Raw or ECW or some old show. Yeah, you're right. That would be a lot more fun, I think, than a whole pay-per-view.
Yeah.
That would be a lot more fun. I think so, too.
So, I'm excited. Like, I just, I love doing the podcast. It's not easy sometimes as far as just editing and all the work that goes into it behind the scenes. I mean, we all, I feel, put our own flair, no pun intended, I guess, but on the podcast, and I feel like it shows. So, and we want feedback. We get feedback off our Facebook group, which is nice. We have listeners out there, and we appreciate every one of you. So, next year, I'm hoping to do more things like T-shirts and stuff like that. But it's just gonna. It's going to be a little while. Maybe towards the end of the year, next year I can have some stuff out. Because I think it would be fun to have merchandise.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because that way people can wear it and be fun merchandise,
not
just our name.
People say, what's that? If you don't know.
I mean, you know.
You better
it's just,
call somebody.
It's just one of those things I've been picking
Dude,
up off other
drink,
podcasts.
Nonsense, so. Folks. He works his ass off on editing and producing. Jonathan drives all the way back across town to get the interview set up. I act the fool.
And Jonathan really has done a lot this year just for the simple fact that we run late a lot. I mean, we usually end about 10:30. And then Jonathan has early call, and he's been getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning sometimes. And, you know, we
usually I get up at 4:45.
Okay, 4:45.
Sometimes I have to be there at 5 o'clock.
Oh gosh, so Jonathan really has
there at 7 p.m. work overnight.
Yeah, so Jonathan really has done a lot, but we love having him as a part of the show. I mean, hell, I've been to his house. I was just at his house a week ago. I mean, I consider him a good friend, and John's a good friend as well. And I got to see my first Ring of Honor show with Jonathan.
So that's where I need to act like Enzo when Drew Gabagulak says his friend.
they were really funny. I did go to Raw when it was here.
Oh, right, yeah?
Survivor Series. So I was a little lost because I was behind, but it was a really good show. I haven't seen it on TV yet, but I think that pairing is really...
Oh, they're just magical. Magical. I love them. I love them together. So, there you go.
Any last words from anybody?
Yeah, I guess say everybody go around and just, you know, either a prediction or a hope or something about what you hope that 2018 brings. We'll start with you, Jonathan.
Well, I like what we said earlier. Basically, wrestling is in an upswing, but it's been a slow build, I think. And like you said, it's been from the bottom up. Usually it's a big, you know, there was the Monday Night Wars, and before that there was the whatever you call the 80s era. And it's always, basically, it's always been two big companies, and there's been a trickle down to where, like, there's a third company that benefits from it, and then the independents or territories, you know, kind of interchangeable,
right,
benefit from it. But now it's coming from, you know, I think TNA screwed up just enough that Ring of Honor kind of came up to be the second top company, at least in America, largely because of their relationship with New Japan and Bullet Club. Mm-hmm. And that thing, you know, that's huge. That's influenced so much stuff in WWE, and just like Pro Wrestling Tees has, you know, not only has Pro Wrestling Tees allowed independent wrestlers to make a living, but you see WWEshop.com t-shirts where they're clearly influenced. It's not just like a t-shirt with a picture of a wrestler on it anymore. They do clever things, or
yes,
they play off of pop culture stuff, you know, things that are popular outside of WWE and wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So I just hope to see all these positive trends keep happening. I hope to see the women continue to be a big part of all the wrestling companies, the independent guys continuing to have enough negotiating power to not have to take whatever WWE offers them and be able to say, no, I'm doing okay with my t-shirt sales and my New Japan contract and and being able to be at home with my family 5 days a week and wrestle 2 days a week or whatever.
Yes.
So that's not a prediction, I guess. Just
well, no, like I said, prediction or just, you know, thoughts about the, you know, future or whatever. Richard.
I don't know. I hope next year I can enjoy wrestling a little more. I feel like this year I don't get to watch it a lot, and when I do, I'm kind of like bah humbug mood most of the time, kind of like Jonathan was talking about. You know, a lot of times I just wish I could enjoy it and not be so critical of it, but I just feel like I've been that way so long that that's what I am. But you know, it's all good. I've enjoyed what I see. I watch a lot of YouTube stuff, old stuff, newer stuff that I can't find. So, and John's a big reason I do that. I've watched some Memphis stuff that I've never seen before, and probably won't be able to outside of YouTube. So I just hope I get more back into wrestling and the indies. I'm loving the indies. They're coming around here more. I definitely want to. I know it's probably not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen next year, but I don't know where WrestleMania is gonna be the following year. But I really, really want to start to try to go to a WrestleMania because I've never been to one, and I don't want to keep waiting around. So I hope they're either in Orlando or maybe Atlanta or somewhere in the South where it's easier to get to. But I'm gonna have to make that happen. I wish I could do New Orleans because it's a fun city. But I going to Alaska a few months later. So we're saving up for that.
Right.
I have a feeling because of our new Mercedes-Benz dome.
Oh, the Atlanta.
Yeah, eventually it'll go to Atlanta.
I'm honestly surprised that we didn't get it this year.
Me too.
I think, weren't they trying to do that for a while where, like, they would be one of the first events at a new
They'd love to do that. They tried to do it in Dallas, too, but they couldn't quite make it there because people were ahead of them, including the NBA finals and stuff. And the Super Bowl.
But they will be back to Atlanta, I feel, in the next four years. So
yeah, they'll go in that
If they go to Atlanta, I will definitely do a whole weekend thing.
Because there's a chance that they could break the record going to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Potentially, I think.
I mean, we have a stadium in Knoxville that holds 105,000 people. A little stadium called Neyland Stadium where the Vols play. It's one of the biggest college stadiums around. One of the biggest stadiums.
Yeah, I was going to say, 100,000 people, that's a big stadium.
105.
It's kind of like the Coliseum that USC plays in. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it's an open stadium, but we're not cool enough to have it here.
So my things are pretty generic in general. I just really hope that wrestling continues to improve the way that I see it doing. I hope that we get more of the type of stuff that the good stuff that we've been getting some of the people that and they work out the kinks and we continue having these great shows and great wrestling, and that the indie scene continues to just burgeon and do great, and then ROH and New Japan. I hope New Japan has great success with this gambit they've got going on. And as for the podcast, I just hope that we do even better next year, and that we get even more spread out there, and more people listening, and a lot more fun stuff to do. And that's just the thing to be better. By the way, you were mentioning, Jonathan, about how the cool things that they do that tie into other things that outside of WWE. Do either one of you know what probably the initial idea behind the Yep movement is, other than obviously playing off the Yes movement, but why they went with Yep?
I don't.
That's another thing that I haven't seen yet.
So yes, I've seen it, but I didn't realize. Like I wasn't there for the when it started.
They did. They never said it. When they started it, they just came out wearing, Daniel Bryan shirts with the P over the S. And it's all self-explanatory. Well, so where they actually got the initial idea.
It's an inside joke.
It's an inside joke, yes.
I bet. I mean, it'll...
Oh, I know exactly what it is. there is a little video that had been posted years ago on YouTube that got into the zeitgeist again. Has been bouncing around and is all hot right now, and podcasts and everything else are talking about it, of this promo that this wrestler named Jumpin' Jeff Farmer did many years ago in IPW, and he's just horrible. He is horrible. It's a horrible promo, and he begins it with when the announcer hands it off, for him to speak. He goes, "Yep." And that's just everybody's doing Yep now, so that's that's Kevin.
That's funny.
And Sammy. He's like, okay, we're gonna do Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it probably is. They're having fun with this, so I'd say that it's more of an inside joke, kind of. They can just do whatever they want and sell T-shirts that say Yep, and
yes,
it's the same thing. So
I want them. I want a Yep shirt.
All right, guys.
Folks, we're out of here. Happy 2018. This is our last show of the year. We'll see you on the other side. And we thank you for listening. And as always, we always encourage feedback. We always encourage you to come over to the Facebook, say something. I always encourage you to give us any kind of feedback whatsoever. Because how do we know how we can get better if you don't tell us? So anyway, Happy New Year and better New Year and all that. Bye.
Oh, Caesar's greetings, gentlemen and ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark Dream Dusty Rhodes with a special wish for a happy new year full of Mary Yellow, that Miller High Life, going to the bunkhouse stampede and being the bull of the woods, and going to the pay window. Now let's all get together for a happy new year. Peoples out there, touch your hand to the computer screen on your, or on your iPhone, or whatever the thing is you're listening to me on. And right now, come on in here. Some of my friends, baby.
I was told there were big sparklers and those big things you blow on. Ah, did somebody say, whoop, 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 Andre the Giant did not sign up for this.
Hey, man, Bray Wyatt knows about your Happy New Year's, man. This new year is not gonna be happy, man. Happiness is an illusion. They want you to believe it. It's created in a stew of your mind's own vegetables and beef, man. And sometimes chicken, man. Oh, you're telling me, huh? Another year, I guess nobody cares. What about me? What about Raven?
I'm May Young and I will never grow old.
Do you have the problem with Naomi?
Oh, I don't like her.
See?
You don't feel the glow?
Who is your favorite female wrestler in WWE? You don't like any of them, do you?
I'd have to think about it.
You don't like any of them.
I'd have to see a roster in front of me. I really like Natalya. I've always liked Natalya.
So you pick the oldest one. You pick one that's been around forever and ever. Not kidding. I like that.
Well, I don't. So, I mean, I really need to go. But the Ruby Riott Squad thing or whatever.
Yes.
I love the little redneck that they have, like the country girl.
Oh,
like she's
completely out
of place. And like she's like, this is more hens than a hen farm or something. It's like, what the hell? It's like you have these two goth girls and she's like, she's like this farmer girl.
Yes, I love her. And that's funny because there was a lot of people that on different podcasts and veggies boards that were like, I can't understand a word she's saying. And so that's because you're from the North.
I was going to say, I understand everything she's saying.
So, yeah. Anyway, I'll let you go. We'll talk about it more later.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.